Hello and welcome to Speak the Words, a Cosmere podcast. I'm Sean.
And I'm Mango.
This is a podcast where we slowly but surely make our way through the story of the Cosmere, the Stormlight Archive more specifically. Currently on Book 3, Oathbringer. We are on Part 4, so we're getting pretty close to the end. Last time on the Stormlight Archive.
Previously on the Stormlight Archive.
They should just hire us to do that for the show whenever they do that. It's the scuffed recap that we do at the top of every episode, but we do it for the TV show.
Yes. And anytime you have to ask me what happened last time, and I'll be like, I don't remember.
I don't know.
And that's the recap.
Last time, Kaladin and the crew made their way across Shadesmar some more. Everybody's pretty sad. It's not going great, really. We learned that Syl had been bonded to an old Radiant during the time before the Recreants. And they found a lighthouse.
Oh, yeah.
Zeth had a test and...
passed with flying colors.
Flying colors. He swore the second ideal, and he can now lash himself again.
Cool.
He can fly and all that. Dalinar, we had a Dalinar flashback, which was depressing. If you remember, it was him being an alcoholic.
Oh, yeah. And then Renarin, like, baby 12-year-old Renarin.
Yeah.
Got him some alcohol. I was like, it's okay, Dad. We're here. And then Dalinar started crying.
Yep. And then we had one Navani chapter where after Dalinar has brought all of these monarchs together, he has picked the perfect time to have a complete mental breakdown. So he has left Navani to pick up the pieces.
Oh, boy.
And Navani is in the process of helping make sure that the coalition does not break apart before it begins. She assigned the different countries some tasks to handle.
And they revealed that Alethkar has fallen.
And they've decided that Yakaved will be more than likely the next target of the Voidbringer assault. And so they are preparing to fight there. This time, we start with chapter 97, which is titled Rino, R-I-I-N-O. And it has Kaladin symbol. And the epigraph reads, "Of the Unmade, Sejanat was most feared by the Radiants. They spoke extensively of her ability to corrupt Spren, though only lesser Spren, whatever that means." From Hesse's Mythica, page 89. We start the chapter in a Kaladin flashback. Kaladin is remembering one of his previous escape attempts as a slave. He was hiding in the darkness, holding the hand of an older woman who was too scared to move. As they begin to move, he hears a snap as a hunting trap closes down around the woman's leg. She screams, and lights burst from lanterns all around them. The slaves make a break for it and are slaughtered. Kaladin tries to stop the bleeding on the old woman's leg as she whispers for him to run. He isn't able to do anything, so he just holds her hand and cries as she dies. All the other slaves are killed, all except for Kaladin. Regardless of the reason, Kaladin had lived. He always did.
This was one of the times he tried to escape it as a slave.
Yep, and everybody died but him.
Everyone always dies but him.
Mm-hmm. And we cut to the present day, where Kaladin is creeping up to the lighthouse that they found at the end of last time. And there are anticipation Spren crawling around near him, but it's fun to mention because instead of being like, you know, weird, fun, like, little mystical things, they're just like fucking bugs that are crawling around him. Shadesmar is pretty cool. He gets to the lighthouse and glances in through the window, and he sees inside what he believes to be an old Shin man reading. The old man freezes, looks up, and calls out to Kaladin. Kaladin sighed, then stood up. And we cut to Shallan's POV. Shallan and the others are waiting. She didn't like Bont ascending in Kaladin alone. Vale should have been able to help, but she was still broken from the events in Kolinar. Shallan begins drawing some of the Spren she'd been seeing. Syl asks Pattern if the world looks weird to him since he doesn't have eyes, and then she realizes that technically they both don't have eyes, since they're just power made manifest. "We honor Spren mimic honor himself. You cryptics mimic... weird stuff? The fundamental underlying mathematics by which natural phenomena occur. Hmm... truths that explain the fabric of existence.
Does that mean that there's like a cryptic that has a head that looks like a golden spiral or something?
Probably. They're all different spirals. Well, I don't think any of them would be golden, but they're all, I think they're all black spirals,
Do you not know what the golden spiral is?
No, I thought you were being literal. Let me look. Golden spiral? Oh, this. Yeah, there's probably somebody with this.
By golden spiral, I don't mean like it is the color gold.
Yeah, no, I literally thought you meant golden. No, no. I see what you mean now. Sean lowers her pencil. What she had been drawing looks like a child's scribble. Veil had been seeping out. Adolin comes over to check on her. He says that Kaladin has battle fatigue and that they have to keep an eye on him when he's just sitting around. She asks him what he thinks of Azure, and he gives a breakdown of her clothing. And Shallan is like, that's not helpful. And Adolin says that you can learn a lot about a person from how they dress. Then he points out a nearby spren and is like, that thing looks weird. And then Shallan looks at it and realizes that it is, it kind of looks like a glory spren, but it's the wrong color and shape. And Syl yells that it's one of Odium's. We cut back to Kaladin. Kaladin entered the lighthouse. The Shin Man says that he was cutting it close and they don't have much time. He says that the best readings happen at the beginning of a high storm and they only have 2 minutes. Kaladin followed the man into another room with a small table in the center with a lump covered by a black cloth. One wall contained a picture of people kneeling before a bright white mirror. Another was a cityscape at dusk with a group of low houses clustered before an enormous wall that had light glowing beyond it. So the people kneeling before a bright white mirror is probably one of the perpendicularities on Cell, which is where the Book of Elantris takes place. And the drawing of the cityscape is almost certainly the city of Elantris. This lighthouse man is an Elantrian. He is actually in Elantris. He doesn't have a very big role, but he's in, you know, a little bit of it.
He is in the book.
He is in the book.
What is he doing in Shadesmar on Roshar?
So, actually, okay, I'm going to talk to you about Elantris for just a second because you asked this question and we're never going to cover that book in any meaningful way. So, there is a place in Elantris. So, the idea with Elantris is that these people turn into Elantrians and they cannot die like that. They kind of become immortal. And something is wrong and it's broken. And now instead of becoming Elantrians, people become like zombies. They don't become full Elantrians. They're like, they like stop halfway through. And so there's a place in the book, which is like a pool of like a weird liquid in the ground that we now know as a perpendicularity. But when Elantris came out, like we didn't know that. They find in Elantris, they don't realize that it's a perpendicularity, but they find that if they throw somebody into it, the person like disappears.
Like, I wonder why.
So that's how they kill like Elantrians to put them out of their misery of the zombie state. Is this guy is in like a zombie state because of the bad thing that happened, and the main character carries him up to this special pool in the mountain and throws him in. To give him like peace or whatever, and then once in reality, it just sends him to the cognitive realm.
And once they get here, they're fine.
I don't know if they were fine then. At the end of Elantris, they fix it. Like that's like they save the day. Oh. It might have been that he was fixed after the events of the book take place, or like maybe something changed when he entered the cognitive realm. But yeah, that's how he gets from the physical realm to on Cell to here as he gets thrown into a perpendicularity by the main character of Elantris. So this guy says that the price is just 2 marks of stormlight and shows Kaladin a crystal globe on the table. Kaladin is confused and the man asks if he came for a fortune reading during a high storm when the realms blend. So I can kind of expand on something. Azure last time said that she came through Cultivation's perpendicularity, but that there's another one that she was told to avoid because it's too erratic. It's the High Storms, presumably. Presumably the High Storms act as a perpendicularity because it's where Honor's power is most gathered. And that's what a perpendicularity is. It's where a lot of Ashard's power is gathered.
Which means that you can kind of switch between the realms sometimes.
Yes.
And that's why people can get visions during High Storms.
Presumably that is involved in how the visions work, yes. And that's why they said it was erratic when Azure was talking about it last episode, because like it's hard to tell when a high storm is going to strike on this side. Kaladin says that he's just looking for passage, and the old man seems disappointed and goes to check his calendar to see when the next supply boat is coming. Outside, the sky rippled with light, and Kaladin gaped. "That," Kaladin said. "Is that what a high storm looks like on this side?" "Hmm. Oh, new are you? How have you gotten into Shadesmar but not seen a storm pass? Did you come directly from the Perpendicularity?" The old man frowned. "Not a lot of people coming through there anymore." That light. The bright sphere on the table shifted colors, matching the pearlescent ripples above. There was no gemstone inside that globe, and the light seemed different, transfixing. "Here now," the man said as Kaladin stepped forward. "Don't touch that. It's only for properly trained for..." Kaladin rested his hand on the sphere and felt himself get carried away by the storm. And we cut back to Shallan's point of view. Shallan and the others hide but are too slow, and the corrupted glory sprens lands on Shallan's arm. "Odium suspects that you survived," a voice said in her mind. "Sajaa not. He thinks something strange happened to the Oathgate because of our influence. We've never managed to enlighten such powerful Spren before. It's believable that something odd might happen. I lied and said I think you were sent far, far from the point of transfer. He has minions in this realm, and they will be told to hunt you, so take care. Fortunately, he doesn't know that you're a Lightweaver. He thinks you're an Elsecaller for some reason. I will do what I can, but I'm not sure he trusts me any longer." Syl tries to snatch it, but it dodges and flies out over the ocean. We cut to Kaladin's point of view. Kaladin rode the storm. Then a figure. Dalinar Kolin, kneeling someplace dark, surrounded by 9 shadows. A flash of glowing red eyes. The enemy's champion was coming. Kaladin knew in that moment that Dalinar was in terrible, terrible danger. Without help, the Blackthorn was doomed. "Where?" Kaladin screamed. "When? How do I reach him?" The colors diminished. "Please!" He saw a flash of a vaguely familiar city. Tall, built along the stones, it had a distinctive pattern of buildings at the center, a wall and an ocean beyond. Kaladin dropped to his knees in the fortune teller's rooms. "Troon, seers like myself, you're ruin it, or..." The fortune teller trailed off, then took Kaladin's head, turning it toward him. "You saw something?" Kaladin nodded weakly. "How? Impossible, unless... you're invested? What heightening are you?" He squinted at Kaladin. "No, something else. Merciful Domi. A surge binder? It has begun again?" Kaladin goes and gets the others.
He's been here for a long time, hasn't he?
Yes, yes. Shallan and Adolin negotiate with the Elantrian, Reno, as they ate some food that he had given them in exchange for a few infused spheres. And the food they're eating is canned from the Mistborn world. One of the big exports of the Mistborn world in terms of... cognitive realm trade is canned food.
Oh yeah, because by this
they're advanced in metal.
By this point, like they're in
Era 2 is about to happen at this point.
Oh, yeah. I thought that Era 2 would have happened.
It happens in between Stormlight 5 and 6.
Oh, okay.
So at this point, Mistborn is like guns and factories and stuff. Yeah.
So they have canned food.
Yeah. Reno explains that Stormlight is used as currency on this side. Azure is untrusting of the Elantrian, saying that people who claim to see the future are mainly just trying to prey on people's hopes. Kaladin said that what he saw was real, and Azure says that even the gods of her land only catch glimpses of the spiritual realm. She says that she's only met one person who has ever understood it, and she believes that he might actually be a god. Kaladin immediately guesses correctly that she is talking about Wit. The food they're eating is canned from the Mistborn... Oh, yeah, I already said that. Syl is standing out on the coast, having not wanted to enter the lighthouse for some reason. Adolin says that his ship should be arriving any time now, and Pattern says that they'll be going to Celebrant, a city near the ruins of Rathalos on this side. Adolin is visibly uncomfortable about this. "What?" Kaladin asked. "Rathalos was where my mother was killed," Adolin said. "Assassinated by rebels. Her death drove my father into a fury. We almost lost him to the despair." He shook his head, and Shallan rested her hand on his arm. "It's not a pleasant event to think about."
I forgot that they don't know.
Mm-hmm. Sadeas burned the ground, the city to the ground in retribution.
Oh, they also don't know that Dalinar didn't do it. Oh, that's bad. That feels really bad.
My father gets a strange, distant expression whenever someone mentions Rathalos. I think he blames himself for not stopping Sadeas, even though he was mad with grief at the time, wounded and incoherent from an attempt on his life. Azure says that Celebrant is the wrong direction, as they needed to be heading toward the Horneater Peaks. Pattern says that they can get passage to anywhere from the city. Kaladin gets some paper from Shallan and sketches the city that he saw in the vision, and Shallan says that it's Thalen City, and Kaladin says that they have to try to get to the Oathgate there. Shallan is unsure that they can even make it work, and Reno tells them that something strange was happening near the Horneater Peaks, and that boats that went there weren't returning from it. Kaladin needed to get to Thalen City. The darkness inside him seemed to retreat. He had a purpose, a goal. Protect Dalinar. A few hours later, Kaladin sits waiting with Sail as they watch a ship sailing towards them. Except it doesn't have a sail. Instead, it's being pulled by two giant spren through the ocean of beads. And that is the end of the chapter.
That feels real bad, man.
The next chapter is chapter 98, which is titled Loopholes, and it has Zeth's symbol. The epigraph reads, Lore suggested leaving a city if the spren there start acting strangely. Curiously, Sejanaut was often regarded as an individual when others like Moloch or Asher Tamarn were seen as forces. From Hesse's Mythica, page 90. Zeth and the other squires are to have a test where they fight amidst a field of a dozen long wooden poles. There are bags on the top of the poles with powders that they are to use to mark the other squires with. The more marks of powder that you have, the more points you lose. And Zeth thinks, this would be like those days in his youth, spent training with the Honor Blades. I don't know if they've mentioned that before.
That they trained with the Honor Blades?
As a kid, yeah. I don't know if he's mentioned that.
You've mentioned that they trained with the Honor Blades. I didn't know that he was a child when they did it.
Yeah. That's what he's saying now, is that he trained in his youth as a with the Honor Blades.
Okay, yeah.
He grabs a bag of pink dust.
I did already know that.
Yeah, okay. Okay. We're getting to the part where there's times where I don't remember if they've already said something or not.
I don't know if they said something, but I know you said... No, yeah, they have.
Yeah,
They mentioned training. I don't know if they mentioned that it was children that were training, but they mentioned training.
Mm-hmm. So he grabs a bag of pink dust, and then, What? The sword asked. I don't understand. Where is the evil? No evil today, Sword Nimi. Just a challenge. He nails one of the squires with the pouch, and immediately the game begins with pouches being flown in all directions. It's a pretty fun sequence. For the sake of the podcast, I'm skimming over it. It's one of those scenes where, like, in an adaptation, this would be really cool. It's very colorful. Lots of flying. Zeth starts to feel good while he plays the game. Then, immediately, he felt guilty. He had left tears, blood, and terror in his wake. He had destroyed monarchies, families, innocent and guilty alike. He could not be happy. He was only a tool of retribution, not redemption, for he dared not believe in such. If he was to be forced to keep living, it should not be a life that anyone would ever envy. You think like Vasher, the sword said. Do you know Vasher? He teaches swords to people now, which is funny because Vara Trelides always says Vasher isn't any good with a sword. Zeth continues the game, no longer enjoying it. Eventually, four teammates begin to trail him. Make a stand, the sword suggested. You can take them! For once, Zeth agreed. He was the assassin in white, and this was but a game. They kept going until the game came close to ending. The squires decide to gang up on Zeth as he was the obvious current winner. And Nightblood's like, oh, good! And Zeth continues to outshine everyone else until his stormlight runs out and he falls into the Pure Lake. They wail on him with the pouches as he goes down and the game ends. Wow, the sword said. I kind of feel bad for you. Thank you, Sword Nimi. What were those two spren floating nearby, shaped as small slits in the air? They separated the sky like wounds in skin, exposing a black field full of stars. When they moved, the substance of reality bent around them. Zeth bowed his head. He might have lost this contest, but he seemed to have impressed the high spren. Or, had he lost? What exactly had the rules been? He swims through the lake, back towards the masters, who were counting points. Zeth suddenly felt frustrated by their games. Nin had promised him the opportunity to cleanse Shinovar. What time was there for games? Zeth declares that he won the game, as the goal was to have the least amount of dust on them as possible, and he had washed all the dust off in the lake. One of the masters warns him about relying too much on loopholes, but confirms that Zeth in fact won. He says that the High Spren agree. Key tells one of the other masters that Zeth is beyond the skill of the others, and another one says that Zeth will bond a Spren soon. "Not soon," Zeth said. "Right now. I shall swear the third ideal this night, choosing to follow the law. I..." "No," a voice interrupted. "Nin, Sun God, Nael, Naku, Nalan, the Illuminator, the Judge, a founder of humankind, defender against the desolations, a man ascended to divinity. The Herald of Justice had returned."
Shut up, it's Nael.
It's Nael. "Before you swear, Zeth's son Naturo, there are things you need to understand." He looked across the Skybreakers. "Things you all must understand. Squires, masters, gather our gemstone reserves and mobile packs. We will leave most of the squires. They leak Stormlight too much and we have a long way to go." "Tonight? Just one?" Key asked. "Tonight. It is time for you to learn the two greatest secrets that I know." And that is the end of the chapter. I have an image for you.
It looks like a fish, but like not.
Yeah.
It looks like an eel, but these... like not.
They do kind of look like eels. These are like, these are the things that are pulling the ships in Shadesmar.
They're pretty.
You can see on the bottom one, there's kind of a harness attached to it.
Yeah. They're pretty, but also kind of ominous.
Yeah. Chapter 99 is titled Reachers, and it has Kaladin's symbol. The epigraph reads, "Nergal was known for driving forces into a battle rage, lending them great ferocity. Curiously, he did this to both sides of a conflict, Voidbringer and human. This seems common of the less self-aware Spren." From Hesse's Mythica, page 121. Kaladin wakes on the ship in Shadesmar, having slept longer than the rest. He had been plagued by nightmares of his men dying, of Elokar and Moash. The darkness blanketed his feelings, making him lethargic. He hated that he was the last to rise. That was always a bad sign. He climbs up to the top deck, which was populated by Spren, light Spren, which are known more commonly as Reachers. And I'm going to send you this, just a fan art of the face of a Reacher.
Oh, I don't like that.
They're like made of metal, kind of. They look like they're made of like bronze.
I thought they're not supposed to look like people.
Which ones?
I thought that the only...
like, still looks like a person.
Yeah, I thought that was only because they were taken literally directly from Honor. But other Spren are not taken to look exactly like Honor, so they don't look like people.
A lot of them actually end up looking like people. Curiously, the Edge Dancer Spren look a lot like people on this side. Really, honestly, the only ones I can think of that don't really look a lot like people on this side are Cryptics.
On this side.
Yeah, yeah. On the other side, I believe Syl, I think Ivory shows up as a person.
Kind of.
Syl and Ivory, yeah, he's like a like an inky figure. But, like, Pattern is a pattern, and Windle shows up as, like, leaves, like vines.
Yeah.
On the other side, they're less human-like, except for Syl. So, the Reachers are wearing actual human clothing, not an imitation like Syl is wearing. They don't have weapons outside of knives and harpoons. Syl is standing near the bow, her normal red dress now red instead of white-blue. Her hair was black, and her skin was tan like Kaladin's. He makes his way to her, but is stopped by the boat captain, Iko. He takes Kaladin below deck. While they walk, he explains the concept of a perfect gemstone, one that will hold Stormlight indefinitely so that it doesn't drain. There's essentially a bank in Celebrant that holds Stormlight in them and gives people credit in the city for it. Iko has Kaladin help get a box out from storage, and he opens it up to reveal a strange device. He puts a glass bead into a hole in the center of the device and has Kaladin give him a sphere with Stormlight. While holding the sphere in one hand, Iko touches the bead in the device and uses the Stormlight to make the ice manifest on this side. He hands the device to Kaladin, telling him that the ice will create water and keep the humans from dying of thirst. It takes about half an hour to make a small cup of water. Kaladin is standing on the top deck again when Syl comes over and complains that the Reachers won't let her ride one of the flying Spren. She says that she wants to fly, and when he points out that they both can fly, she says that he doesn't really fly, he just falls the wrong way. He asks what happened to her appearance, and she tells him that she had Shallan create a light weaving so that the crew didn't know that there was an honor spren on board. She tells him to go talk to Shallan, and he points out that she's betrothed to Adolin, and she's like, that just means that she isn't actually married yet.
Syl
rested her hand on his knee.
Syl.
Kaladin, I'm your spren. It's my duty to make sure that you're not alone. Is that so? Who decided? I did. And don't give me excuses about not being lonely or about only needing your brothers in arms. You can't lie to me. You feel dark, sad. You need something, someone, and she makes you feel better. It felt like Syl and his emotions were double-teaming him. One smiled with encouragement while the other whispered terrible things. That he'd always be alone. That Terra had been right to leave him. I think Terra has been mentioned way back in The Way of Kings, but she was a girlfriend that he'd had in Amaram's army.
Oh.
Kaladin gets another cup of water and brings it to Shallan, showing her how the device works. She points out that he keeps his balance on the boat well, unlike Azure, who is holding onto the railing for dear life. He flips through her sketchbook, and she points out that the spren that are pulling the ship manifest on the other side near creatures that should be heavier than they are. They're called Luxpren in the physical realm, but Mandra here. She says that she thinks they're what let sky eels fly and keep chasm fiends from being crushed by their own weight. She continues that one of the Mandra keepers said that they vanish sometimes, which they call dropping. Shallan posits that this is when they're being pulled into the physical realm. She also says that if they're taken too far from where humans live in the physical realm, they will die. Kaladin flips to a really shitty drawing of Captain Iko and assumes that Adolin had gotten a hold of the notebook, and Shallan snatches it away from him. They make a few bad jokes back and forth, and Kaladin asks if she's noticed that the Reachers walk around barefoot. Shallan says that they're touching copper lines in the deck that vibrate and seemingly are used to communicate non-verbally. Shallan says that she thinks they're moving faster than an average ship on their side as they don't have to worry about winds. She thinks it will take them 2 days to reach Celebrant. He points to Thalen City on the bottom of the map and insists that they need to get there to save Dalinar. Shallan is worried, as it's dangerous to know the future in their religion, and tells him that they'll make a choice when they get to Celebrant. She makes another joke and manages to get the Kaladin equivalent of a smile out of him. Something felt warm within him at being near her. Something felt right. It wasn't like Laurel, his boyhood crush, or even like Terra, his first real romance. It was something different, and he couldn't define it. He only knew he didn't want it to stop. It pushed back the darkness. Down in the chasms, he said, when we were trapped together, you talked about your life. About your father. I remember. How do you do it, Shallan? How do you keep smiling and laughing? How do you keep from fixating on the terrible things that have happened? I cover them up. I have this uncanny ability to hide away something I don't want to think about. It's getting harder. But for most things, I can just... Wow. I know. I'm crazy. No, Shallan, I wish I could do the same. She looked at him. You're crazy. How nice would it be if I could simply shove it all away? He'd tried to imagine it, not spending his life worrying about the mistakes he'd made, not hearing the constant whispers that he wasn't good enough, or that he'd failed his men. This way I'll never face it, Shallan said. It's better than being unable to function. That's what I tell myself. She shook her head. Well, whatever you're doing, it's obviously working. If I could smother these emotions, I'd do so eagerly. She nodded, but fell silent, then resisted all further attempts to draw her into conversation. And that is the end of the chapter. Chapter 100! Sorry, not 30. Chapter 100! We're at 100!
That means nothing to me at this point.
Chapter 100 is titled An Old Friend, and it has a Dalinar symbol. The epigraph reads, I'm convinced that Nergal is still active on Roshar. The accounts of the Alethi thrill of battle align too well with ancient records, including the visions of red mist and dying creatures. From Hesse's Mythica, page 140. Dalinar remembered almost everything now, though he still hadn't recovered the details of his meeting with the Night Watcher. He's touring Vaidenar, which had been devastated by the Vaiden Civil War, and then the arrival of the Everstorm. He couldn't help but think of what he'd done to Rathalos. And so, Evie's tears accompanied him. The cries of dying children. Hypocrite, they said. Murderer. Destroyer. Dalinar goes to a nearby gazebo for a moment alone and surveys the city. It gave him a good view of the destruction. Walls broken in places, the palace nothing more than rubble. Huge swaths of the city had been burned. Beyond the walls, scars on the rock where huge heaps of bodies had been burned. He could smell smoke. That wasn't good. In the years following Evry's death, smoke had often sent him descending into one of his worst days. He could fight it. He wasn't the man he'd been all those years ago. He thinks about the Vaden military and how, for some reason, they had kept fighting even after losing more than half their numbers. There's more phantom weeping. Dalinar drew a deep breath, but smelled only smoke. "Why must I have these memories?" he thought, angry. "Why did they suddenly return?" He was still worried about Adolin and Elokar. Dalinar tried to stand, straight-backed and at attention, beneath the weight of it all. Unfortunately, he knew too well that if you locked your knees and stood too straight, you risked fainting. Why was it that trying to stand tall should make you so much more likely to fall? Taravangian came up to see him holding one of the half-shards that Dalinar had wanted to see. The old man says that they're crude devices, and that there are legends of a silvery metal that fell from the sky and could block shard blades. Taravangian brings up the method of creating fabrials by trapping Spren, and points out that the Spren inside the shield could have one day created a Night Radiant. Dalinar tries to switch the conversation to Taravangian's health. "It is a good day for me. I feel better than I have recently, but that can be dangerous. I'm prone to thinking about mistakes I've made." Taravangian smiled in a kindly way. "I try to tell myself that at the very least, I made the best choice I could with the information I had. Unfortunately, I'm certain I didn't make the best choices I could. But you wouldn't change them. If you did, you'd be a different person." "I did change them," Dalinar thought. "I erased them. And I did become a different person." Taravangian asks if Dalinar would change history if he could. If he would make it so that the Sunmaker had unified all of Roshar under a single banner. Dalinar says that he would have done terrible things to do it. And Taravangian points out that at least then, Dalinar would have been in command of a unified Roshar to point at the Voidbringers. Dalinar can't handle thinking about this currently and excuses himself. He goes to one of the bunkers where the wounded soldiers were. Each had survived when his entire platoon had fell. Heroes, but not the conventional type. It took being a soldier to understand the heroism of simply being willing to continue after all your friends had died. He finds a wounded veteran who had actually faced Dalinar in a battle years ago. Dalinar asks the man what it had been like during the Civil War, and the man says that it was a nightmare. He says that nobody would stop, even though it should have been done. They just kept on fighting, killing to kill. Another wounded man said that something had burned in them, making it so that they couldn't stop, no matter how tired they were. Dalinar instantly recognizes the description as the thrill. It started to glow inside Dalinar. So familiar, so warm, and so terrible. Dalinar felt it stir like a favorite axe hound, surprised to hear its master's voice after so long. He hadn't felt it in what seemed like an eternity. Even back on the Shattered Plains, when he'd last felt it, it had seemed to be weakening. Suddenly, that made sense. It wasn't that he'd been learning to overcome the thrill. Instead, it had left him to come here. Dalinar was growing even more overwhelmed, and instead of returning to the rest of his party, he went to the top of the city walls. The thrill called to him, distant and thin. It seemed that Dalinar had been four people in his life. The bloodlusty warrior who had killed wherever he was pointed and the consequences could go to damnation. The general who had feigned distinguished civility when secretly he'd longed to get back on the battlefield so he could shed more blood. Third, the broken man, the one who had paid for the actions of his youth. Then finally, the fourth man, most false of them all, the man who had given up his memories so he could pretend to be something better. A Vaden soldier comes out to him, demanding to know why he was on the wall, and Dalinar felt the thrill urge him to lash out and fight. He fled again. His guards piled out after him. "Sir?" Rial asked. "Sir, are you... is everything..." Dalinar sucked in Stormlight, hoping it would drive away the thrill. It didn't. It seemed to complement the sensation, driving him to act. "Sir?" Rial asked, holding out a canteen that smelled of something strong. "I know you said I shouldn't carry this, but I did. And you might need it." Dalinar stared at that canteen. If he drank that, he could forget the whispers, forget the burned city and what he'd done to Rathalos and to Evie. "Blood of my fathers, please, no." He spun away from Rial. He needed rest. That was all. Just rest. He marched back to the Oathgate, the thrill nipping at him the whole way. "If you become that first man again, it will stop hurting. In your youth, you did what you needed to be done. You were stronger then. Leave me alone. Give me your pain. Dalinar looked toward the sky and let out a bellow. He charged through the streets, no longer caring what people thought when they saw him. He needed to be away from the city. Dalinar gets to the top of the Oath Gate, where Navani is standing, and she points out a collection of ardents nearby. Dalinar Colin, one said, stepping forward. The Council of Curates declares you a heretic. We cannot tolerate your insistence that the Almighty is not God. You are hereby proclaimed excommunicate and anathema. You have no right. We have every right. The Ardents must watch the Light Eye so that you steer your subjects well. That is still our duty, as outlined in the Covenants of Theocracy, witnessed for centuries. Did you really think we would ignore what you've been practicing? Or what you've been preaching? Dalinar gritted his teeth as the stupid Ardent began outlining Dalinar's heresies one by one, demanding that he deny them. The thrill stirred, sensing a fight, sensing blood. I'm going to kill him. I have to run now, or I will kill this man. So he ran. He dashed to the Oathgate control building, frantic with the need to escape. He scrambled up to the keyhole and only then remembered that he didn't have a shard blade that could operate this device. Dalinar, the Stormfather rumbled. Something is wrong. Something I cannot see. Something hidden to me. What are you sensing? I have to get away. I will not be a sword to you. We spoke of this. Dalinar growled. He felt something he could touch, something beyond places. The power that bound worlds together. His power. Wait, the Stormfather said. This is not right. Dalinar ignored him, reaching beyond and pulling power through. Something bright white manifested in his hand, and he rammed it into the keyhole. The Stormfather groaned, a sound like thunder. The power made the Oathgate work regardless. Dalinar flipped the dial that would make only the small building transport, then pushed the keyhole around the outside of the room, using the power as a handhold. A ring of light flashed around the structure. He stumbled out and onto a platform before Urethiru. The Stormfather pulled back from him. The thrill flooded in to replace it. Even this far away, Dalinar couldn't escape it. You can't escape yourself, Dalinar, Evie's mind said in his mind. This is who you are. Accept it. He couldn't run. Blood of my fathers, please, please help me. But to whom was he praying? He staggered down from the platform in a daze. He made his way to his room, increasingly desperate to find a way, any way, to hide from Evie's condemning voice. In his rooms, he pulled a book off the shelf. He held the Way of Kings as if it were a talisman that would drive back the pain. It did nothing. Once this book had saved him, but now it seemed useless. He couldn't even read its words. Dropping the book, he stumbled out of the room. No conscious thought led him to Adolin's chambers or drove him to ransack the younger man's room. But he found what he'd hoped. A bottle of wine kept for a special occasion. This represented that third man he'd been. Shame, frustration, and days spent in a haze. Terrible times. Times he'd given up part of his soul in order to forget. But it was either this or start killing again. He raised the bottle to his lips. And that is the end of the chapter. He didn't overcome the thrill, it just left him to come to Vaidenar. And now it's back. We have one more chapter for tonight. It is chapter 101, Deadeye, and it has Adolin's symbol. The epigraph reads, Moloch is very similar to Nergal, though instead of inspiring a battle rage, he supposedly granted visions of the future. In this, lore and theology align. Seeing the future originates with the unmade and is from the enemy. From Hesse's Mythica, page 143. Adolin is, I was like, why did I write this? And then I remembered why I wrote this. Adolin is dripping himself out in the captain's quarters, using the oversized clothing available to get as close to hot as possible. Eco compliments him on the appearance and says that he can tell that Adolin was a ruler in the physical realm. He says that regardless of status, no humans can be trusted with oaths. He apologizes for being rude, but says that betraying oaths is in their nature. Adolin says that his father is proof that this isn't the case. Adolin was worried that he might actually have to take the throne. He joined the others on the deck, who were wearing clothing they'd bought from the Reachers. Theirs didn't look as good on them, however. The sky began to ripple again as another high storm appeared. They note how the Reachers stand up straighter as it appears, as if they're feeding off of it. Shallan goes to interview some of the Reachers, and Kaladin goes to stand at the bow with Syl. Azure and Adolin talk for a moment, her noting that his skill at drip was unusual for a noble. He's like, how many nobles have you known? And she's just like, you'd be surprised. He asks why she's so vague all the time, and she says that she had been too trusting in her youth and had learned her lesson. Yeah, Denth really fucking got her on that one.
Yep.
And then from the book, it says, "But in answer to your question, I have known royals, including one woman who left it behind. Throne, family, responsibility. She abandoned her duty. The throne was better served by someone who enjoyed sitting on it. Duty isn't about what you enjoy. It's about doing what is demanded of you and serving the greater good. You can't just abandon responsibility because you feel like it." Azor glanced at Adolin, and he felt himself blush. "Sorry," he said. "My father and my uncle might have instilled me with a little passion on the topic." "It's all right," Azor said. "Maybe you're right, and maybe there's something in me that knows it. I always find myself in situations like in Kolinar, leading the Wall Guard. I get too involved, then abandon everyone." "You didn't abandon the Wall Guard, Azor. You couldn't have prevented what happened." "Perhaps. I can't help feeling that this is merely one in a long string of duties abdicated, of burdens set down, perhaps to disastrous results." For some reason, she put her hand on the pommel of her shard blade when she said that. "But of all the things I've walked away from, the one I don't regret is allowing someone else to rule. Sometimes, the best way to do your duty is to let someone else, someone more capable, try carrying it." Adolin muses on that as Shallan returns. They flirt a little bit, and she points out that Celebrant is growing close on the horizon. Captain Eco appears and tells Adolin that it's time for them to get his Deadeye out. They go down to the brig, where the spren of Adolin's sword is sitting. Eco says that they can't let the Deadeyes on the deck, as they'll just wander and fall off. Adolin sees another Deadeye in the cell, and Eco tells him that it's his father. He says that if he lets the Reacher out of the cell, he'll try and find the human carrying his corpse. Eco turned and regarded him. "What is she to you?" "A friend. A tool. You use her corpse on the other side, don't you? Well, I won't blame you. I've heard stories of what they can do, and I am a pragmatic person. Just don't pretend she's your friend." They go back up on the deck as the ship approaches the docks. The shore was marked by long warehouses which blocked the city proper. They sailed up to a pier and released the flying spren, making the ship sink farther into the ocean until it settled. Eco shook Adolin's hand, saying that he's going to unload his stuff and then head east away from trouble. He suggests that they stay in Shadesmar, as the physical realm is too dangerous right now. He points out where they can find another boat to take them the rest of the way, and where they can exchange their stormlight for credit in the city. Syl was still in her disguise, and Adolin wonders if being an honor spren was really that big a deal. Shallan plans to go to the money changer, then see if they can go find more rations. Then go find passage. Azor asks where they should go, the Perpendicularity or Thalen City, and Adolin says they should see what their options are first. They split into two groups. Shallan goes to find passage, as she had experience with it from her time chasing Yasna. Patton and Azor stay with her, while Adolin, Kaladin, and Syl go get supplies. Syl seems reluctant to enter the city proper, but Adolin says that they need a spren to explain the culture. And that is where we will end off for tonight.
Brandon's talked about this in his lectures before. He was very vague about it, but he mentioned that the party eventually got to this alternate realm, and then they are going one direction, but originally he had it to where they just got diverted to another place where the everything important was supposed to happen.
Yes.
But readers felt really unsatisfied, and like the plot was being like paused for this other thing. So he gave one of the characters visions of this other place, so that when they got diverted to that place, it wouldn't feel like the plot was being stopped. So that's probably why Kaladin has
the vision there,
because otherwise people would have been like, "What? We're supposed to go to this place. Why are we going there?"
Yeah, we're supposed to go to the Perpendicularity. Why are we going to Thalen City? Yeah. Yeah. So that gives you a little bit of hint of maybe where this book might end then.
Yep.
Which is a little bit of... actually, let me look ahead really quick. I want to see if next episode is when... No, it's not next episode. It's the episode after, I think. Coming up is... There's going to be a scene where it's supposed to be like, "Oh, shit. Oh, no. Yakovet doesn't make sense. It's obviously Thalen City." which is, it's funny that you kind of know that.
Trying to go to Yakovet?
No, I'm talking about like, Brandon says in the lecture that like they go there because that's where things are happening. And the book right now is setting up things to happen in Yakovet.
Because they think that Yakoved is the next place that the people are going to attack, the Voidbringers but it's are attack. Not.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not like a big twist of like at the very end of the book, they're in one place and they need to be somewhere else. It's coming up. Dalinar is going to have a scene where he's like looking at the battle plans that have been drawn up and he's like, no, Yakoved doesn't make any sense. It has to be Thalen City. So it's not major that like, you know that, but, it means that I actually can kind of skip over some of that scene.
Yeah. Thanks for, watching the lectures before I ever read any of the books. Yeah. Because I get spoiled for some stuff.
Yeah. Very minor things.
Yeah. Well, some minor things. Some major things.
Mm. Like you knew about the Dead Eyes.
Well, that wasn't from his lectures.
Oh. That wasn't from his lectures? I thought it was from his lectures on magic systems.
I don't remember. I would have to go back and rewatch that lecture.
Yeah. Don't. Let's get to the end of this book before you rewatch any lectures, because I think all of his lectures are from before this book came out. Oh no, sorry, it's from before Rhythm of War came out. So there's nothing he could like spoil about the fourth book because it hadn't come out yet.
Well, did this book come out during quarantine?
No, this book came out in 2017. Book four came out in quarantine.
Oh.
It came out at the end of 2020.
Because I know he did some lectures during quarantine, so.
Yes, I don't think they would have been, I believe his lectures from quarantine are at the beginning of the pandemic, so I don't think he has any lectures online from after Rhythm of War is released.
Any?
I don't think so. He might. Don't go looking. I don't want him to spoil the cool shit that happens.
I'm trying to remember if that's what it was originally from. Oh, yes. Yes, it was. Yes, it was from that.
Yeah.
Are you good? Was that a yawn or was that a gasp?
Yeah, sorry. I gasped because I just saw, I opened YouTube and I just saw a trailer for a documentary about the Star Wars holiday special. And I'm fucking ecstatic for that. Because that shit is nuts. I can't wait to find out what they were thinking when they made that. That's really exciting. That's really exciting.
Also, yeah, yes. Yes, I do think it was from that lecture. Because he mentioned something about magic having a cost. And if you misuse that magic, it also having a cost. And that's where I learned about Dead Eyes.
Yes, next time we're going to be in Celebrant. All I have for you to tease next time is that Celebrant. We're in Celebrant. It's a cool Spren city. You'll see some cool stuff in there. We have a Discord server. The link is in the episode description. You guys can follow us on Twitter at SpeakStormlight. Email us at speakthewordsasp@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter at Sean_AFK. And as always, our cover art was made by our good friend Alx at Alx_BigBoy. Go drop them a follow. Thank you guys so much for listening. Mango, I think it is time for you to speak the words.
Life before death, strength before weakness, and journey before destination.